Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for this very special discussion on the record-breaking Jurassic World by Adam Riske.
It's world, yo.
Because usually you would say it's park.
Yo. I would usually say it's park, yo.
I got to explain it for those who don't know the deepest of deep cuts.
It's okay. I just figured, like, they'd be like, wow, this guy sounds really cool if it's your first time listening. Like,
yeah, no,
he
for
sounds
sure.
like a surfer guy.
For sure. Jurassic World made the fastest movie ever to make over $500 million.
Oh,
second biggest domestic opening of all time, just 3 million shy of the Avengers.
Yeah, I heard the number two ranking, so I was wondering where you were going with the biggest of all time.
Sure, yes. We're going to be talking about Jurassic World. We'll talk spoiler-free for a little bit, and then we will, of course, get into spoilers, as we are wont to do later on. But first, Adam Riske,
yo.
Happy Junesploitation.
Thanks. Happy Junesploitation to you, too.
Still going on. If you aren't familiar with it, go to FThisMovie.net, click on the Junesploitation tab at the top. We watch exploitation and genre movies or whatever movies you want every day. There's a different theme for a different day. Everyone on the site continues to be doing awesome and watching a lot of movies and having a lot of great conversations. So thank you to all of you who have been participating. Now let me go back to what I was going to say.
Well, also, before you get into that, this drops on Monday, so it'd be Spaghetti Western Day.
Correct.
So cook up a plate of gabagool.
I like it.
And then, like, watch Django or watch Once Upon a Time in the West.
How do you feel about the Vanderbeek one?
Texas Rangers.
There it is. I could not come up with the name of it for the life of me.
Is there any Italians in that movie?
I would assume so.
Like they worked on craft services.
Ashton Kutcher might be part Italian. Dylan McDermott, not very Italian.
No.
No.
I'm drawing a blank on Pete. Was Allie Larder in that?
She might as well have been, but no. I think she was in American Outlaws, which was the Armageddon to Texas Rangers. Deep Impact.
Who was the girl in Texas
Rachel
Rangers?
Lee Cook.
Rachel Lee Cook. Well, she
RLC.
Well, Italians like to cook, and it's a Western, so
love
there
it.
You go.
Look how you did
there
it.
There you
Look
go.
Look how you did it.
You
hey,
go.
Adam Riske, have you seen anything good lately?
I have, yeah. Before I get into, well, basically, I've just been watching Junesploitation stuff recently, and then I saw a couple other things. So I'll talk about the couple other things.
All right.
First, I watched one of your favorites last night because I was flipping around HBO Go and just trying to pick a random movie.
Okay.
I landed on Rapid Fire.
Oh yeah.
And I haven't watched it since I was probably 10 years old.
Super awesome, right?
I didn't like it back in the day, and now I really like it.
Because it's super awesome.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't like it back then, but I always was one of those people who said The Crow is better than Rapid Fire, and now I think Rapid Fire is better than The Crow.
For reals.
And I'm a really big Powers Booth fan. I just get happy when I see Powers Booth in a movie, and he's playing a guy named Mace Ryan, which is just like one of the greatest action movie names ever.
Bowling at the Fireside Bowl.
Exactly. And Jake Lowe isn't a bad name either. And I don't know. I thought that the plot was ingenious. I don't know why, but I'm just like, how did they weave in Tiananmen Square into this mafia hit? How did they do that? And it's so clean. It's so economical. And I really enjoyed it. I had a good time with Rapid Fire.
I don't think I loved it as much back when it came out as I do now. I think it's a movie that I've really, in recent years, come to embrace a whole lot. I really, really love it. And I was not aware that it was on HBO Go, which means it's available in HD.
Yes, it is.
So I gotta watch that. Why did
is it not on
put
Blu-ray?
That out? No, it's not.
Oh, I'm surprised.
But if there's an HD master, somebody get on that.
Yeah, for reals.
People
it's
at
from
Fox.
The director of Free Willy 2, The Adventure Home.
Dwight H. Little directed Free Willy 2?
Yeah, and I'll say as a Free Willy apologist.
DHL is my boy.
I will say as an apologist for the Free Willy franchise that it is the most problematic of the sequels.
Sure.
Free Willy 3 has some really interesting themes about whaling. So, like, if you're a 10-year-old going to see Free Willy 3 and you want to see a drama about a father's, you know, plight against should I be a whaler or should I love my son, then it's good.
Those are the choices.
Yeah. So it's but Free Willy 2 is kind of more like the Jurassic World of that franchise.
Okay,
we're
got
just
it.
Throwing all the animatronic whales at you as opposed to the real deal whales.
DHL made Halloween 4.
He sure did.
Which I love.
It's a great movie.
He made Marked for Death.
I have not seen that yet.
Seagal versus the Jamaicans.
I've seen the ending of it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a crazy
Screwface. It has one of the best villain deaths of all time because he dies 11 times.
Yeah.
It's unreal. Phantom of the Opera, the Robert Englund one.
I've not seen that one.
It's not my favorite of his. Rapid Fire, and apparently Free Willy 2.
He did Murder at 1600 also.
He did?
Yeah.
Well,
that was kind of
nobody's perfect. A blob. Although, to be fair, that is the address that changes all the rules. That's what I've heard.
That.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a fan of that movie.
I'm not a fan of it either. No. But, you know, like when you got a Wesley Snipes movie, you want a kick-ass villain like Alan Alda.
He's your go-to.
To go can up we, against.
Can we get Powers Booth? No, man, he's busy. Can we get Alda? Yeah, no, Alda's in. Alda said he'd do it.
Lights, Camera, Jackson one time had like a longest ride review, and he was talking about Alan Alda in that, and he called him like a proverbial lion in winter.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
I want to hear from Lights, Camera, Adam a little bit later, but let's not bring out the big guns yet.
No, not yet.
So what else besides Rapid Fire?
I wrote a review, so I'll be brief, but I just wanted to recommend Love and Mercy, the movie about Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
I'm not one to really love rock biopics usually because I feel like
most of them are garbage.
Well, yeah, because it's either the rise and fall or the rise, the fall, and then the rise again. It's like just one of those two arcs.
Right.
And this one doesn't really go against that grain, but the acting is so good that I think it's worth seeing.
How's Cusack?
Cusack's good.
Good.
He seems alert.
Okay.
As opposed to his
I'll take awake. I don't even need alert. Yeah. I will literally take conscious at this point.
No, as opposed to his DTV work, he's kind of he's really just kind of I don't know how to explain it. I mean, like, he's playing like a damaged person. So he's I don't know, it's like a sensitive performance, I guess. So it's a good movie. Paul Dano actually is not bad in it.
Okay.
And I'm not a Paul Dano fan, but, like, I'm slowly coming around on him because he got the shit kicked out of him in Prisoners, and I felt like he was paying penance for years of shitty performances.
Maybe.
And the music's great. Elizabeth Banks is really, really good in it. She's kind of got the tricky part of having to play just a normal woman.
Wait, director Elizabeth Banks?
Yeah, auteur of Pitch Perfect 2. she's great in it. Paul Giamatti's kind of got the hammiest part because he's playing like the crazy doctor, but who's kind of keeping Wilson over medicated.
Could you intercut his scenes from San Andreas? Could you just swap them out and not know the difference?
Probably. Definitely. Yes. I think also you could intersplice Sideways in there because he's just holding a glass of wine
in both
those movies in every scene.
Yeah. That's cool. I really want to see that movie. I haven't had a chance yet.
You might want to get out there quick because there were three people, including me, in the
terrific.
Yeah. So support indie cinema. Not called Me, Earl and the Dying Girl.
Oof, that hit theaters this week, didn't it?
Yeah. It sure
we are
did.
Both fans of that movie.
Oh my God, it's so good, so good. There's not a false moment in that movie.
It's interesting. I feel like maybe I don't know what happened. We won't spend too much time on this movie, but Adam and I were at the same screening at the Chicago Critics Film Festival, and it was warmly received by the audience, but I think a lot of that's just politeness, the directors in attendance, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Because since coming out, I've actually read a number of reviews that are, you know, lukewarm to pretty negative.
Yeah.
And when I published my own review, I started hearing from a few people like, oh good, it wasn't just me. And so maybe there was something in the air at Sundance. I mean, people obviously really loved it at Sundance. It won both major awards. And yet now that it doesn't seem like it's going to be the kind of breakout sensation that I think people were expecting it to be.
Yeah, and I'm not one to root against movies, but it's just if I had a quote on the poster, it would just say phony baloney bullshit.
I like just phony baloney.
Yeah.
That's what they should have called the movie.
Yeah.
I might have liked it more.
Phony baloney. Yeah. That's like that would be like up there with Hate Ship, Love Ship.
Not a great movie.
Not a great movie. No. But for Junesploitation, I have seen some great movies. I saw Sugar Hill.
Yes. Jeannie Bell. No, that's not Jeannie Bell.
No, I don't know who the lead actress is who's in it, but she looks like an African-American Amanda Bynes. And that does it for me, surprisingly enough. Funny little aside, I was having a DVD marathon with some friends a few months ago, and we were talking about who's the one actor or actress that you're still embarrassed to have be attracted to.
Okay.
And my answer was Amanda Bynes.
Really?
Yeah, not like crazy Amanda
Bynes. Right, right, right.
But like in her heyday, I'm just sure. Like, yeah, yeah.
Like She's the Man,
like
Amanda
She's
Bynes.
The Man era Amanda Bynes.
Sure. Like What a Girl Wants Amanda Bynes.
She was too young at that
time. I'm running out of Amanda Bynes. What's the Snow White one she did?
And the Sydney White.
Sydney White, I never saw.
I did not see Sydney White. No. That was a Miramax joint, and I don't get down with Miramax Bynes.
Marky Bay is the lead actress in Sugar Hill.
Okay. Yeah, so Sugar Hill was really fun. It's a great movie to watch on Blaxploitation Day. Yeah. I watched it on Zombie Day because they were voodoo zombies, right. So it still counted. It's got really interesting, fun characters. So you've got like Mama Matrace, who's like this witch doctor lady, and she's got white hair and she's spooky. And then there's this guy named Baron Samdi, and I'm convinced it's what Clarence Williams III from Tales from the Hood was basing his performance off of. Like Baron Samdi is just crazy in this movie, and it's just a lot of fun. There's like, it's not graphic really. It's just like,
I think it's like a PG movie actually.
Yeah. It's not R. It's like, it's got that like kind of weird, like coffee vibe to it where it's, like all the white gangsters are just like, she's a funky lady. And I don't know. I just like really like coffee and I really like Sugar Hill. So yeah. I would recommend that one.
That I believe is out on Blu-ray this month from Kino Lorber.
I will be picking that up.
Yeah. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, it's good. And then, I don't need to sell anybody on Assault on Precinct 13.
I don't think so. I think we're all down with the,
So I'll just say real quick. It was the first time I saw it. It was the first time I saw it. That scene, oh my God, I did not see that coming. So me and I think it was Saul watched it the same day.
Okay.
And it was both our first times watching it, and we were commenting back and forth, and I said that my new phrase for when I want to just like figuratively kill myself is just like, I'm going to go back for some swirl.
It's shocking. It's a shocking moment.
It is a crazy moment.
Yeah.
So I saw that. And then some things that were less good but interesting.
All right.
I saw Shockma the same day you saw Shockma.
Yeah.
That was on Animals Day. If you haven't seen the trailer for Shockma, you should watch the trailer for it. It's really funny.
Yeah. I had more fun with the movie, I think, than you did. And I will admit, like, it is tedious because it seems like everything happens in real time. Like it just, if it was a half an hour shorter, I actually think that movie would be a ton of fun.
Yeah.
It just, everything goes on and on and on. And we had somebody, it might've been you or somebody else talked about the scene where they're throwing the marbles and the spoons.
Oh, that wasn't me.
Out the window. They're trying to get the attention of a car down on the street. They can only fit little items out through the slats in the window. So they're throwing marbles and spoons. And like, on the one hand, I want to applaud it for saying like, hey, these are characters who are trying anything, who are thinking, who are constantly trying to be found. I don't want to spoil anything, but then when you get to the end of the movie, you're like, oh, so there was a phone the whole time. Why were we throwing marbles and spoons?
Yeah.
So that's it. I'm like, hey, great. They're actually actively trying to get out of the situation. But at the same time, like, we probably don't need to watch them do this twice in real time.
Yeah, exactly. Did you hear about how they got the baboon to be crazy?
No, but he was legitimately scary, I thought.
Yeah, he was really terrifying. They apparently, like, you know all the scenes where it's like busting up against a door?
Yeah.
On the other side of the door, there was a female baboon that was in heat.
Oh, wow.
And that's how they tricked it to go nuts.
That would do the trick.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So I would be terrified to be on the set of that movie.
I would be terrified to be a female baboon.
Yeah.
Especially one in heat. Yeah, no, I agree. Baboons are scary, aggressive, and they will eat your face. And so I actually thought the movie, because it was a real baboon, because it was actually freaking out, it was actually scary. You know, if it was just like a guy in latex pretending to be a monster or something, it's not nearly as scary as when it's like, oh, that's a real monkey that's going to really eat your face.
Exactly. And it has a ton of energy. It's like me after one cup of coffee. What's the name of the girl who was on Kate and Allie who was in that movie?
Ari Myers?
Okay, Ari Myers. And I remember she's on Kate and Allie because in the trailer they're just like, Ari Myers from Kate and Allie.
Yeah.
Christopher Atkins. Christopher Atkins from The Blue Lagoon. And then
Amanda Weiss.
From Silverado and Nightmare.
They say Silverado?
Yeah, they say a Nightmare.
I like how we're turning also into the Grindhouse voice, too.
Yeah, exactly.
From Better Off Dead, Amanda Weiss.
I was really distracted by Ari Myers because I'm like,
me too, but
like,
maybe for different reasons.
She looks like if you took early 2000s Jessica Simpson.
I'm on board.
Topanga.
I'm also on board.
And Cheddar Bob from 8 Mile.
You've lost me.
And turned them
You've
into one person.
Lost me with Cheddar Bob. How dare you?
I'm sorry. But that's what she looked like.
Cheddar
and it kept distracting me.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was in Shakma is the type of movie, or Shakma, or whatever, however you pronounce it, is the type of movie that I can think back on and laugh at, but I wouldn't want to watch again.
Christopher Atkins' performance is something. Yeah. It's not good.
He's got stalker eyes, and he's like really creepy.
Yeah, and he's screaming at people that he's supposed to be friends with.
Yeah.
And I, for the whole movie, could not get, we're talking so much about Shakma. I, for the whole movie, and I had a crush on Ari Myers from her Kate and Allie days, so I was happy to see her show up, and then she put on the weird like harem outfit and it's just seducing Chris Atkins. And the whole movie, I'm like, is she someone's little sister? Like, I think she's supposed to be
same. Yeah, she is.
She is, but she's supposed to basically be like one of their peers. Yes.
I would think so.
A couple years younger, because I know she's the one character's younger sister, but it's not like, oh, my kid's sister. Like, here's my 12-year-old sister hanging around. She's not supposed to be that.
No.
But the whole movie, I thought she was being that. So when she shows up in the harem outfit to seduce Christopher Atkins.
Yeah, it's like that scene in Orphan where the little girl is a woman.
When I saw her in that outfit, though, I had the reaction that Shakma has to a female baboon. And I was just jumping around punching my TV. Throwing poo at it. And it wasn't my poo, so it wasn't gross.
Where'd you get the poo?
Yeah, listen, I got a guy.
Okay.
I called him before I put in Shakma. I was like, I'm going to put in Shakma.
Yeah.
Bring me something.
He's like, how many LBs of pee do you need?
And I was like, well, listen, Topanga, Jessica Simpson, Cheddar Bob. He was like, got it, 5 LBs of pee.
Yeah.
It was going to be 7, so he said Cheddar Bob.
He's like, you want me to stack them up or lay them out?
Anything besides Shakma?
The only other one I'll talk about is Raw Force.
Yes, you saw Raw Force. Holy shit, that movie. All right.
I feel almost like I have a 5-star library down the street from my apartment. And I'm almost ashamed that they carry Raw Force.
That's outstanding that they carry Raw Force.
It was on Blu-ray, too.
Yeah, Vinegar Syndrome put it out.
Where do I start with Raw Force? Raw Force is like a group of swingers made a movie after really digging Mortal Kombat. But like, it came out in the 80s, so it like predates Mortal Kombat. But that's what I can compare it to, because they go to Warrior's Island, and there's this whole thing where like the people on the island are cannibal monks, and they eat women to be able to have the power to raise the dead.
Right.
And they trade the women for jade. So there's like all these jade markets where you could buy like these
DVDs of the movie Jade.
I wish. Yeah.
That's just South Korea.
That P guy owns a copy of
they
Jade.
They have
for sure.
So many leftover copies of Jade on DVD.
Yeah. So what's your take on Raw Force? Because I thought it was crazy, and I couldn't believe what I was watching, but I didn't really like it too much.
No, it's not Miami Connection. You know, you go into it wanting it to be. Yeah, for sure. I watched it with Mike and Adam Thaws, and we had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
I think if I was watching it by myself, I wouldn't have had as much fun with it. Sure. You know, I think it's entertaining at times and crazy, and you just can't figure out what market were they trying to appeal to when they made this movie.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed my experience of watching it, but I don't know how often I would go back to it.
The to be continued stinger at the end made me laugh out
that
loud.
Was pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome. And I mean, the lead actor, like the real jockish guy, like he's hilarious to watch.
Yeah. It's something. If you're looking for a movie to laugh at with friends during Junesploitation, I would recommend it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that's about it.
That's it? All right. I'll try to go quickly through mine because I just don't have that much to say about most of them. So I watched a movie called Let Us Pray.
Okay.
But get this. It's P-R-E-Y.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Is your mind blown?
A little bit.
So you kind of already know what this movie is. This is an Irish horror film set in a prison, very reminiscent of Assault on Precinct 13. I mean, not nearly as good. I was excited about it because Dark Sky put it out, and I kind of like a lot of what they've been doing lately, but also Pollyanna McIntosh is in it from The Woman.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of The Woman.
Yeah.
She's basically kind of playing like the straight man, though. She's like the cop in the jail. She's not a cop. She's security, you know, in the jail, a guard, working her first night. And they bring in this guy, played by Liam Cunningham from Game of Thrones, who, like, may or may not be the devil. And he starts getting all the other inmates to hurt themselves, hurt other people. It's kind of like an extended Twilight Zone episode. It's like, it's one of these movies that, like, it's not bad. There's nothing to really complain about. It gets really dark and pretty violent, and it's all, you know, I think it's pretty much all practical effects, which I appreciate. And the last 5 minutes are pretty nuts in, like, that way that, like, the last 5 minutes of Knowing are nuts. Did you ever see Knowing?
The Alex Proyas movie? Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a fan of that movie.
I like Knowing, yeah. I liked Knowing, I think, better than Let Us Pray. So it was a movie that just, I don't have anything bad to say about it, but I also don't have anything good to say about it. It's like, okay, if it's on, watch it. If you don't ever see it, live your life and be happy, because you're fine.
Is it out on DVD?
It just came out, I think, on DVD and Blu-ray. My guess is it'll be on Netflix within the month. And some Friday, I'll recommend it because I literally will have nothing else to recommend. And I'll say, I don't know, this was fine. I like Pollyanna McIntosh. She doesn't get much to do in the movie. Mm-hmm. I saw a movie called Ghost House.
Okay.
Which is coming out on Blu-ray from Scream Factory. It's part of a double feature with a movie called Witchery, which has David Hasselhoff and Linda Blair. And
It doesn't sound promising.
It's not the best. It's not the worst.
Witchery,
I mean, it's kind of fun in like an 80s way.
Okay.
I'm looking up the title for these movies. So in Italy, they do this thing where they just like co-opt other people's movies. So like when Lucio Fulci makes Zombie, I'm screwing up the order. It's like Zombie Dawn of the Dead comes out and it's called Zombie. And then when Zombie is made, it's called Zombie 2. And it's like a sequel to Dawn of the Dead, even though it's not. They just kind of co-opted like Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
And so Ghost House is part of a series that in Italy they were releasing as they're called the La Casa movies, like the house. Mm-hmm. So Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 are La Casa 1 and 2. And then Ghost House comes out and they're like, well, let's call it La Casa 3. So it's sort of a sequel to Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, even though it has less than nothing to do with either of those movies. And then Witchery comes out and it has nothing to do with the previous three movies, but that's La Casa 4. Okay. So Ghost House,
those Italians,
they get to do whatever they want.
Rightfully so.
It is directed by Umberto Lenzi, who is a filmmaker that I haven't loved a ton of his work. He did Nightmare City, and I'm pretty sure he did Cannibal Ferox, which I just saw for the first time and didn't love. But he directs it under the name Humphrey Humbert, which I think is a great pseudonym.
Yeah.
Ghost House is like a weird, it's very 80s, very kind of Italian, although it seems American. It's like kind of a fake Fulci movie. It's a weird cross between like a Fulci movie and Night of the Demons. It's not good, really, by any measurable criteria, and yet I loved it. Like, I had so much fun watching it, and part of that is because the dialogue is nuts and the performances don't make any sense in terms of how the characters talk to one another.
Is it that great, like, a English dubbing that they have in those, like, Fulci movies?
Not as egregious. Okay. Like, this seemed more like these were actors. It does have an ADR feel to it, but it's like, you can tell it's their voices for the most part. It's not that crazy, like, in Fulci movies where, like, the little kid, Bob, in one of them, who has, like, a man's voice. Yeah. So I had a lot of fun with it. I don't know who would also enjoy it, so I don't know who to recommend it to, but it's coming out on Blu-ray. Check it out if you want. And the last movie I'll talk about is not really a Junesploitation title. I mean, neither of these were either. These I was watching to review for other things, but I finally saw Laggies.
Oh.
Lynn Shelton's Laggies.
Yeah, I saw Laggies.
I know you did.
Yeah.
It showed up on Amazon Prime Instant Video, and okay, I thought, well, I kind of wanted to see this because once upon a time I was a Lynn Shelton fan.
Yeah.
Her career path is making me very sad because I've liked every one of her movies less than the one before it.
So I think I know where you come down on Laggies.
What? I did not like any of Laggies. I don't even know what movie she was trying to make with that movie.
I'm surprised that it's the type of movie that I have almost no opinion on. I'm surprised it kind of got you this worked up, to be honest.
Because I don't understand why it exists. Like, I agree with you. I understand having no opinion on it because it is that kind of a movie. But then when I take a step back and I think, what is the story that she's trying to tell? An adult woman who gets engaged and freaks out and so spends weeks hanging out with a random high schooler that she just made friends with, living in her house. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I was indifferent towards the movie, and I was like, this movie is dumb and not based in any kind of reality.
Right.
Until it gets to near the end, and then it made some choices that I don't want to give away, where I turned to Erica and I said, oh, this was the movie they were making all along. And I had to call such bullshit on it, because if it wants to be a specific romance, I'll say, it fails. Like, in every conceivable way, it fails. So to try to land there made no sense to me given what had come before.
Yeah, the thing that I remember getting most upset with that movie was that it was just another movie where Goatman Mark Webber crushes ass.
He gets Keira Knightley this time.
He crushes ass in
every
all right.
Movie. Yeah, does. He does pretty well for himself.
Unbelievable.
And it wastes a bunch of
very talented people.
Sam Rockwell, Keira Knightley, Chloe Grace Moretz. Like, these are people who I would like to see in the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even this kind of a movie, kind of low stakes, indie, comedy, drama, whatever, you know, all of the pieces were there for something that I would like, but
yeah, that's yikes. The type of movie that I saw it in theaters, actually.
Oof.
Very cinematic picture. That Laggies.
Right.
I saw it at like 10:15 and I forgot it by noon. It was that it's that type of movie.
It is not very good.
No.
All right. Let's talk Jurassic World.
Yes.
The time is upon us. So, like I said, we're going to talk spoiler-free for a little bit, and then we'll get into spoilers, and we'll give you guys a heads-up in case you didn't see it, although it sounds like a lot of America saw this movie this weekend.
I was very surprised.
A lot of the world.
Yeah.
I was, too. I saw the movie with my mom, which was fun, because I remember her and I going to see the original Jurassic Park in 93. It's like a very happy movie-going memory for me.
Yeah.
So it was fun to be able to go see this one with her, too. And on the drive home, I had mentioned, like, and there's this, you know, where they're setting up for the sequel. And she said, well, you know, wait and see how it does. And I said, oh, no, it's going to make a bunch of money. I knew it would make a bunch of money, especially overseas. I did not think it would make as much money as it did.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody did.
No.
I really think this took people by surprise. And now Universal can lay claim to, like, the two of the biggest openings of the year, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Now, the original park,
mm-hmm,
which we watched this year at F This Movie Fest.
And I will say Jurassic World would be an amazing movie to tweet through.
Okay. Well, Jurassic Park played, I thought, incredibly well at FThis Movie Fest. I have such fond memories of watching that all together. And I know that the original is one of your favorite movies ever.
It's probably top 10.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would, yeah, I get behind that. So you're kind of the Jurassic Park guy at FThis Movie.
Thank you.
So it makes sense that you're here to talk about Jurassic World. So I'm going to let you take the floor. Ah! I'm going to let you, I got all worked up.
You got attacked by a Velociraptor.
I was getting all shockma.
Shockma.
I looked at my computer and I saw Ari Meyer's name and I shockma'd out. Just Google it, everyone. Google it. She's perpetually 14. So I'll let you take the floor first.
All right. So I went into – okay, so my JP resume, love the first one. The Lost World is garbage, and it takes itself way too seriously, and it's a mean-spirited movie. Jurassic Park 3, I used to defend more than I defend now. I think it's kind of – I don't know. It's definitely amateur hour where they – you could tell the budget was lowered by quite a bit, and – Taya Leone and William H. Macy are acting in quotes or in like air quotes, and it doesn't hold up. So going into Jurassic World, I had two criteria. I just wanted it to be fun, and I wanted it to be better than The Lost World and better than Jurassic Park 3. I had no expectation or hopes that it was going to best the original or even equal the original. I just wanted to see a fun summer movie. And on that criteria, I think it definitely works. I had a really good time watching the movie, but I will admit it has a ton of problems and it's dumb as hell. It is dumb, dumb, dumb as hell. But I kind of love it.
Okay. And this will be an interesting conversation then, because
is this going to be our Amazing Spider-Man 2?
It might be. Okay. It might be. I don't know if I feel that strongly about it. It's not like you do either. Yeah, I don't think I liked any of it.
Okay.
I didn't have fun watching it, and it's a frustrating thing again, because I know, you know, sometimes people get confused about the nature of criticism. Like, this is just me representing my opinions.
Yep.
Because already the internet this weekend, you know, this thing, and there's an article that I want to bring up in a little bit. The thing happens where people write the reviews. Okay. Those get clicks, but now, oh no, people still want to talk about this movie. So now we have to write other articles about Jurassic Park. And so then it's like, well, you're allowed to like it. You're not allowed to like it. And people get very personal about, the things that they like, they get defensive about it. So if I'm going to spend the next hour kind of shitting on Jurassic World, understand I'm not attacking. I'm not even talking to you, Adam. I'm talking to you, the listener, your feelings about the movie. It's great that you love it. I'm very happy. So don't feel defensive, because all of a sudden now I'm the asshole who doesn't know how to have fun. Right. I too wanted to just have fun with a goofy dinosaur movie. I will admit that it is a goofy dinosaur movie. I just could not find anything in it that I really liked at all. And every time I came close to finding something that I might like, something would get in the way. I'm on record. We did a whole podcast on The Lost World. I still think it's Steven Spielberg's worst movie. I would have to watch 2 and 3 again to rank this one. I have no idea where it would rank, because it's been a long time since I saw 3. And I think, like you, there was a time there where I was like, 3's fine, whatever, you know. Yeah. Lost World, I'm just not a fan of. But I would also argue that there's nothing in Jurassic World that's as good as at least the RV sequence in Lost World.
I will disagree with you on that one. I think there's two scenes that there's one scene that's not an action sequence, and then there's one scene that is an action sequence, which we might have to save till spoilers.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I'll stand up to that. I'll challenge you on that one.
Okay.
Because I think the RV sequence is good, but I think it's way too long, and I think it's something that if it works, it works. Because of it could work in a Fast and Furious movie. It doesn't have to be a Jurassic Park dinosaur movie.
Yeah, but
where
does that
matter?
Where
it's an RV falling off. Well, it isn't like a dinosaur centric moment. So I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter.
Well, that's like saying the first Jurassic Park, like they could be chased by anything not a T-Rex, but it's good and it's a T-Rex, well, so we associate the two.
You've uncovered my master plan.
They could have been chased by Shockma.
I wanted them to be chased by... All right, fine. You call bullshit. I'll call bullshit on that. Let's move on.
Okay. So, without getting into spoilers, I don't know how long we should talk about it. Like,
yeah, probably not too long.
Yeah. So, I mean, the movie, I would say, bends over backwards to reference the original Jurassic Park over and over again. It's reminding, hey, remember Jurassic Park? Wasn't that good? And I kept thinking, it's like, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's like Jurassic Park fan fiction a lot of times. Yeah.
To a frustrating degree. And so this was interesting because now we're seeing, you know, this was Colin Trevorrow's kind of big Hollywood debut. He made Safety Not Guaranteed, which I was a big fan of. You were also a big fan.
Yes, very much.
And so now we're seeing a lot of these guys who make these successful kind of smaller indie movies get called up to the majors, right? Mm-hmm. And so we saw it with Gareth Evans last year with Godzilla. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it with Colin Trevorrow. We're going to see it, I guess, with Josh Trank, if you could call...
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would call Chronicle like a little indie, but it was a smaller movie. Mm-hmm. Rian Johnson is going to make a Star Wars. Like, so this is happening a lot.
Yep.
And I know he worked really hard to pay homage to the original Jurassic Park, and the movie also kind of bends over backwards to be sort of a commentary about itself, so that it's, everyone wants bigger, louder, more teeth.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
And so it introduces this new dinosaur that's essentially supposed to be a metaphor for Jurassic World.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's trying to, like, have its cake and eat it, too, where it's trying to criticize what it is, but also want you to like it for what it is.
And I think maybe if it had done a better job of being that thing, I could have forgiven it. But if you're just going to keep calling out, like, people just want dumb spectacle, and then be literally nothing more than dumb spectacle. And there's nothing wrong with dumb spectacle, by the way. Like, Jurassic Park, the original Jurassic Park isn't necessarily a movie that's, like, about a ton of stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I remember at the time, people were a little bit dismissive of Jurassic Park because it just seemed so obvious. It was like, here's Michael Crichton. He writes this big, popular kind of pop fiction. And then we get the guy who does pop fiction movies better than anybody else to make it. And it just seemed like packaged together in too easy a way. I remember reading Ebert's review and feeling kind of heartbroken even before I had seen it, because he gave it like 2.5 stars. And I was always disappointed when he didn't like something that I was excited to like, you know?
Sure.
And I saw it, and of course I loved it. And I saw it a bunch of times that same summer. And I feel like with distance, Jurassic Park today only looks better than it did even in 1993.
Oh, yeah. I think for sure.
Because we've seen so many movies that try to do kind of the big summer thrill ride movie and kind of shit the bed at doing it. I think Jurassic Park just looks better and better because it does it better than most movies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not Jaws, but it's not... too far behind.
Right, yeah. Not that was what I remember being the criticism of Jurassic Park when it first came out, was that it wasn't as good as Jaws. And it's like, well, not anything is as good as Jaws when you come to summer blockbusters. So, but I did think, like, the characters got short shrifted a bit, where they were saying, like, oh, they're just cardboard cutouts. And it's like, not really. I think they have some distinct personality.
Again, I wonder what those people would say now, having seen Jurassic World, because I think a movie like Jurassic World just makes Jurassic Park look so much better.
I can agree. I'm in a tough spot with this movie because I feel like I'm going to agree with you on a lot of the things that bothered you about the movie. But the thing that I'm just going to come back to is that this is the Jurassic Park sequel I wanted when I was 11 years old.
Sure.
Like, it is, after I saw Jurassic Park, I was super into the video games and the comic books. And, like, you know, I was 11, so I would write, like, my dream sequels with my friends and stuff like that. And this is a very I mean, like, not, I didn't have the scale in mind in my little short stories, but of Jurassic World, but this is exactly what I would have concocted as an 11-year-old would have loved to have seen the sequel to Jurassic World be, or to Jurassic Park be, not that Lost World bullshit. And it reminded me of, did you ever play, like, for Sega, there was, like, Jurassic Park Rampage Edition?
No.
This is Jurassic Park Rampage Edition. It's just, like, let's open the doors up and let the dinos fight and be crazy.
Right.
And on that level, I mean, like, I've got nothing else almost to say about it other than the thesis of, like, I just had such a great time watching it. So,
and that can't be argued with, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly. So, yeah, but I'll definitely own up to it got to the point where I was enjoying the movie so much that even the dumb stuff seemed charming to me.
Well, there's a thing that I want to talk about, and I'll wait till we get to spoilers. To me, like, whether or not you enjoy this movie can essentially be summed up in your reaction to one specific moment. And I'll bring it up when we get into spoilers.
Okay.
I will agree that, you know, I think it's rare, and we're seeing it happen again a lot more, where a franchise will lay dormant for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And then they'll say, like, well, let's go back to that, because now all the people who grew up with us are making decisions and trying to, you know, cash in on our nostalgia, and they have the IP. So we get the new Ghostbusters, and we get another Indiana Jones, and we get another, you know, and Mad Max a few weeks ago came along and did it better than probably anybody has ever done it.
Yep.
And it's not just a bunch of, like, hey, remember the Mad Max movies from the 80s? It's literally just, here's this, a fourth installment in this universe that I, George Miller, created. Mm-hmm. So in terms of its premise, while I sometimes roll my eyes, I'm just like, oh, so the premise is like, hey, we put dinosaurs in a park and they get out for the fourth time. That kind of irritates me. But at the same time, like, that's what these movies are, right? Like, we made a theme park for dinosaurs and they get out. So to say, like, you shouldn't be Jurassic Park, like, well, it has to be. But I think it's fairly ingenious in terms of, like, I like where they go with the story, that it takes place in the future and now it's a success and there's all these people there. And it's instead of seeing it as another Jurassic Park where they're testing it out, Lost World where it's just some dumb island, Jurassic Park 3.
It's the same dumb island.
Same dumb island, right. Like, here we actually get to see it inside of a functioning theme park. Like, all that stuff is a good idea, I think.
And it's just product placement, but I thought it was kind of funny and charming to see, like, it has one of the best, like, little insert jokes where there's the Margaritaville, and then, like, when the pterodactyls are attacking, the one guy's running off with the two margaritas in his hand, and he won't put them down. I thought that was really funny, and it has, like, a lot of little
I really liked that jokes joke. Like, I think that might have been the only joke I liked in the movie. And I feel like I read somewhere that that's actually Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, I think so.
And I have no confirmation on that. And I forgot about that moment until you just brought it up, but I liked the guy running with the two drinks. I thought that was the one legitimate commentary on, like, American culture. It's not even in America, right?
But, yeah, I mean, like, a lot, the whole, you know, Main Street area of Jurassic World, I mean, it looks exactly like Universal City Walk.
Right.
I was just there, and I mean, they've got the stores like the Brookstone, and then they'll have an IMAX theater, and then they've got Margaritaville and Starbucks and everything. But yeah, I thought it was funny when you go to Universal City Walk and you go to, like, Simpsons, or you go to Universal Studios and you go to Simpsons Land. I went into Moe's Tavern, like this makeshift Moe's Tavern that they put together. And I was like, yeah, I'll have a Duff beer. I'll try that out. It was the worst beer I've ever had. And it was $16.
Are you kidding me?
No, it was $16. So when I saw the guy running with the two drinks, I'm like, that's $32 for alcohol.
Right.
Of course you don't put that down.
Him?
You don't put that down.
Is it another $5 to pee it out?
No, it would have tasted about the same.
I mean, I don't, I guess let's save the rest for spoilers.
Sure. Sure.
Again, if people have fun with it, I can't argue with you, you know, and I feel like this hasn't happened that much this summer. It's been happening a lot in the last two summers where I come out of a movie and I feel like this grouch who doesn't know how to have fun anymore, because people are like, well, what's the big deal? Just turn off your brain, enjoy the movie about dinosaurs fighting. And it's like, yeah, but that's the same argument people use for Transformers. And I don't buy that. Like,
right. It's
got giant robots fighting. Like, well, I need a little bit more than just it literally delivering on its one line premise. So let's talk spoilers about Jurassic World coming up now.
Okay, so the two scenes that I think really work best are when the pterodactyls get out of the aviary and then attack the concourse of people.
Okay.
I thought that was the only moment in the movie where it generated some suspense and some level of kind of anticipation of what was going to happen. And I thought it was really brutal when the thing picked up Katy Perry and it got eaten by the Mosasaurus.
Yeah, I thought that was insanely mean-spirited and tone-deaf with the rest of the movie.
I thought, what
the hell did she do to deserve a death that's that prolonged, like that much punishment?
Well, you could say the same thing about Gennaro in Jurassic Park, because he's a lawyer and that's why he's bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, they kind of set him up as a jackass, but like his is a quick... And by the way, they do it again in this movie. They do the Gennaro death, except it's the Jeep that's turned over instead of
the guy working in the compound,
right?
In Indominus Rex.
No, Gennaro's is nasty, but fast and staged. I think again in such a way that
I don't think it's as fast as you remember it. I mean, because he's cowering and shaking and he's afraid
and
for a while.
Grabs
and then it grabs him. And
he does not get tossed around by four different dinosaurs, dropped, picked up again, dropped into a pool, and then eaten by a bigger dinosaur.
Well, she was looking at her phone the whole time, she deserves
to die. I guess she deserves it. It just seemed weird to pick her up and take her. I was like, yeah, okay. I knew that she was going to be dinosaur bait.
Yeah.
But the level to which it dwells on killing her off, I thought was so bizarre.
Okay.
That's me.
No, I can see, maybe I'm just more bloodthirsty than you are in my Jurassic Park movies, but no, that one didn't bug me too much. In fact, I was just like, oh, wow, that was pretty crazy. That was pretty intense.
Sure.
And then the other one was the only scene that I can definitely say the whole thing was like a practical effect was when the, I don't know what the name of the dinosaur is, but it's one of the herbivores and the Indominus Rex gets loose into a field and it's killed off a bunch of these dinosaurs. And there's one laying on the ground and it's about to die.
Yes.
And Chris Pratt is sort of soothing it and making, and you know, I was half expecting, because the movie at that point was still pretty crazy.
Yeah.
He hadn't gone to the level of the third act craziness, but it was still getting pretty crazy. I thought he was going to like just break its neck.
It was reminding me so much. Have you seen The NeverEnding Story?
Yeah.
It was reminding so much of the turtle in The NeverEnding Story. That's just like, let me sleep. Like, I just wanted the dinosaur to look up at him and be like, sleep.
But I liked that scene because it was the use of a practical effect, and it looked great on camera. And I would argue that there's not enough of that. There's a bunch of push-in shots where you see, like, the Indominus Rex's head, like, trying to sniff out Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. And you can tell that it's CG, and they're reacting to it like it's a green screen or a tennis ball on a stick. And if there was an actual, like, mechanical head there, you probably would have gotten a more genuine scared reaction. I didn't think the people in this movie looked sufficiently scared most of the time.
I would agree with that, but again, I think there were too many people to keep track of. I think every single one of them is underdeveloped. I don't know. My criticisms are not, hey, this movie isn't Jurassic Park, because that's not fair. This movie just needs to be the best possible version of Jurassic World.
Yep.
So when I bring up Jurassic Park, it's not because, like, hey, they should have done it more like this, but here's the model, right? And they don't have to just remake it, obviously, but the characters in that movie, for as stock as they were called in 1993, are not stock, you know? Yep. They're interesting, they're developed to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. When Jeff Goldblum is making jokes in the face of danger, that's his character trait. That's how, that's his defense mechanism, right?
Yeah.
When Bryce Dallas Howard makes jokes in the face of danger, it's completely tone deaf. That's not who she is. Mm-hmm. And yet all of a sudden it's like, well, we need to punctuate this with a laugh line, so let's have her say a joke.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't do that. That doesn't make sense. So no one to me reacted really in the situation. Even the kids were weirdly unfazed by almost dying a bunch of times and being kids.
Yeah.
You have two kids in Jurassic Park who
look genuinely terrified.
Yeah. And that's the model, right? You don't have to just remake it, but when they're going out of their way to, well, we'll have two kids again. Well, what's their story? Well, one of them's into dinosaurs and is kind of annoying the other one. Oh, you mean like the ones in Jurassic Park? Yeah, but this time their parents might be divorcing. Oh, that is interesting.
See, I thought that's
that
a plot
is really interesting.
I was invested in the divorce subplot, and I'll tell you why. Because it meant Judy Greer was about to go back on the market.
Yeah, but didn't it Greer tease you again?
Not really. Not really.
Really?
I didn't, because I, she was deep in the cast list, so I was just like, we're not going to get too much Greer, but like, we're in Tomorrowland, she's like the fifth.
Why do we have
like
any Greer in the movie?
Because I need it. She's my Gallimimus.
No, listen, I like Judy Greer, but I'm saying, why do we need to see those kids' parents ever in the movie?
I mean, it's like an establishing shot. It's like, where did these kids come from? I guess they didn't do that in Jurassic Park.
I mean,
they just showed up.
They were there to see their uncle. Here, they're there to see their aunt.
Can I tell you one of the dumbest questions I've ever asked my parents in my life? When I saw it was when I saw Jurassic Park the first time, and you know the line where Hammond is like, "Well, I invited blah 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 onto the island so that way we could get a better idea from our target audience," and then you hear the kids yell out, "Grandpa," and then he's like, "Kids."
Oh, not their uncle, their grandpa, sorry.
So I always was like, their target audience is grandpas? And I asked my mom, I'm like, "Why is their target audience grandpas?" And she's just like, "Shut up." She like waved her hand at me. She's like, "Shut up, just watch the movie.
I wish you were never born."
It's like, what'd you say? It's like, "Do you want more popcorn?" but yeah, I mean, like, I guess you didn't need to know, but I would have thought you would have loved it because it was like they showed them at Christmas and it's like, oh, it's like Shane Black, a Christmas movie. This could be on your list of Christmas movies, Patrick.
Sure. Yeah, no, it could be. Yeah. That's the scene that you're talking about where they're comforting the dying dinosaur. It's fine. Like, it's one of the better moments in the movie. It sort of, for a second, attempts to humanize Bryce Dallas Howard specifically by sort of putting her face to face with the consequences of...
I'm not going to be able to watch that ever again without thinking, let me sleep.
Create, I'm telling you. The consequences of her actions, you know, that's the closest the movie comes to making her a person, which again, we should come back to. So my litmus test for the movie, it's like, how much you enjoy this movie or don't enjoy this movie kind of comes down to how much you can get on board with a shot of a velociraptor running to save the day in slow motion, like a straight up hero shot of a velociraptor. Do you remember the shot?
Yeah.
It's one of the dumbest things I've seen in a movie this year. And again, this is because I'm not on board with the movie. If you're on board with the movie and that shot happens, maybe you're like, this is so great. Oh, he's got the hero shot.
It was at the very end, right?
Yes.
That's what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah, during the
big
stupid
melee
climax of the movie. By the way, I read somewhere that it's suggested that the T-Rex in this movie is the exact same T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
It is. It is the same T-Rex.
Okay.
I've read that in several places, and you could
Why does that make it better?
It doesn't. It doesn't make it better.
It's
but
just
it's
another
just,
dumb fan fiction thing. See, this makes me crazy.
It is a little
It
Easter
doesn't make
egg.
It worse, yeah. But like, what? I don't. What's the point? I don't, whatever. Anyway. So the hero shot of the velociraptor, to me.
Can we, we should stop and talk about the raptors.
Is the dumbest thing. Go ahead. Let's talk about the raptors.
The thing I was going to say about the raptors is one thing that's drove me nuts since The Lost World is the pussification of the raptors. They've turned them from one of the most stealth, scary, kick-ass villains in a big-budget franchise into, oh, they're just a family. They just are this little commune.
They fucking do, like, the Fast and Furious head nod to Chris Pratt at the end. They're like, yeah, bro.
Yeah.
And he nods back, and it's like, family.
Did you see the gif of the raptor head superimposed on Paul Walker's body from the end of Furious 7?
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter, and
that
it was just
amazing.
Like, I forgot what it was. It was just like, you're really going to leave without saying goodbye.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is accurate. they set up this idea that, like, now the raptors are working with us. And I agree with you. Like, the raptors are the scariest thing in Jurassic Park. They set up the T-Rex, yeah. and it's terrifying, right? Because that attack is such a great sequence. But by the end of the movie, you're like, no, the raptors are actually the thing I'm most afraid of.
I was most afraid of the Dilophosaurus than the raptors. The Dilophosaurus looks like it just doesn't give a fuck about anything.
So we've come a long way, obviously, and now they're sort of being domesticated, and Chris Pratt is controlling them.
Yeah.
And I'm not on board with this idea, but hey.
It's stupid.
But it's different enough. And yeah. I was like, all right, so they're going to do something different. And my objection, and they ended up sort of correcting this, again, not in a way that I particularly was crazy about, but like, as soon as they find out that Indominus Rex is part raptor and he becomes the new alpha and it's supposed to be like this dumb twist.
Yeah.
And then the raptors turn out. I'm just like, so what was the point of having them work alongside Chris Pratt if immediately they just turn on him and go back to being raptors? Now,
I was happy about that because at least it meant they were bad guys again.
Right, but they're not because they're double agents and they end up being good guys again and running in slow motion to save the day. And
that's one thing that drove me crazy was, all right, at the end of the movie, like when, you know, the Indominus Rex is defeated, the T-Rex and the raptor look at each other.
Yeah.
And the T-Rex doesn't eat the raptor.
No.
Even though if it's the same T-Rex from Jurassic Park, he would remember
that. That thing hates raptors.
That thing hates raptors.
Right.
And then
and people.
And then
and captivity.
And then the raptor looks at Chris Pratt.
Right.
And Chris Pratt doesn't think, hey, maybe I should shoot it.
No.
He just lets it run off.
They literally all just nod to each other and they're like, all right, guys. Yeah. You can have any beer you want as long as it's a Corona.
He's like, whether you're a quarter mile away halfway across the world, you will always be my brother.
Right. You kind of cease to make dinosaurs.
I've seen Furious 7 a lot of times.
You kind of cease to make dinosaurs scary when you just have made them like the heroes of the movie.
I also thought the Mosasaurus jumped way too far out of the water to get the Indominus Rex. Like, why couldn't it have just fallen in the water? And then the thing ate it. Why did it have to jump out of the water like 30 feet?
And it just was a cop-out. Again, because I was not enjoying the movie, just everything that happened.
Deus
I was
Ex
like,
Monstera.
Deus Rex Machina, as we should have said on Twitter.
Bryce Dino Howard.
Exactly. It's just
Vincent
but more,
Dino Frio.
More than once in the, we need to talk about Vincent D'Onofrio.
I would love to talk
more
about
more than once
D'Onofrio.
In this movie, it's just a problem is solved by like, oh, and the other dinosaur jumps out and eats it. Okay, great. So it's like, how do we get rid of this? Get the T-Rex. Well, the T-Rex isn't working. Get the thing that jumps out of the water. Okay, great. I don't know. It was all very lazy. And again, you go back to Jurassic Park and that thing is plotted in such a way. And I know there are plot holes. I mean, I know there are things wrong with Jurassic Park. I'm not arguing that it's a perfect movie, but just when you think about like the whole Dennis Nedry subplot, he wants to sell this stuff. So he shuts down the park systems for a little while. And that's ultimately what leads to the dinosaurs getting out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
This leads to this, leads to this, leads to this. It's good plotting.
Yeah.
And Jurassic World, it's like,
there's a lot of
the thing,
stuff.
The doors open a crack and the thing gets out. Great. We're off and running. I mean, it's just that, like, no one fucking tried ever. No one tried in the plotting of this movie at all. But
it's embarrassing when they do try. That's like,
for example,
okay. I don't know. I think, I'm not sure if even the screenwriters thought this out, but the implication that I got was that, okay, one thing I didn't like was they turned Dr. Wu, B.D. Wong, into a
super
bad
villain.
A bad guy. So now I have to watch Jurassic Park knowing that he's a bad guy.
I agree with that, actually.
That's annoying. But so him and Vincent D'Onofrio may have engineered the escape of the Indominus Rex in order to create chaos across the island to get the Raptor Soldier project off the ground.
The fucking idea of Raptor Soldiers was making me laugh every time Vincent D'Onofrio starts explaining, like, imagine the perfect soldier. Fucking Velociraptors? Are you kidding me? This is your plan? We're going to... So many movies, you know, it turns into like, we found this amazing thing. How do we weaponize it? So Jurassic World is part of a long tradition of like lazy writing.
Yeah.
but weaponizing velociraptors as the perfect soldier?
I
just kept picturing Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren and eight velociraptors.
Yeah, but tell me you wouldn't go see Clint Eastwood directed American Raptor.
I felt like that was left over because, you know, if you look on like the – have you ever read the Wikipedia –
I didn't, but I can
summary,
imagine.
Just for Jurassic World.
Through a lot of giraffes.
It's insane how many times they've announced, like, we're making a new, you know, Jurassic Park 4.
Yeah.
And how many people were supposedly going to be cast and how many scripts were written and how many directors were attached. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. And this is where they ended up. Anyway, so supposedly there was some time there where I think John Sayles wrote a draft.
Yeah.
And the John Sayles draft was like human dino hybrid super soldiers. And it's ludicrous, right? And maybe it would have worked. I have no idea. But the premise is so crazy that you're like, well, it's certainly different from – it's certainly not like we opened up a theme park.
Yeah.
This – to me feels left over from the John Sayles draft where like Vincent D'Onofrio's big plan is to turn velociraptors into the perfect soldier.
But wouldn't it be great if like there's a movie where Sienna Miller's like talking to Blue the raptor and she's like, you never come home. When are you coming home? Let another raptor fight the fight. And he's just like,
ah. He's just holding the like, fakest looking raptor baby.
And she's like, you have a good point. You should be the one to go back and fight. You'd take out that sniper, that rival sniper. And also, what fucking army would they fight for? If it's not America, then I'm not interested.
This is what I don't understand any of the Vincent D'Onofrio stuff.
I
don't understand his performance.
I loved
his I don't know where he's supposed to be from because half the time
he had,
he's
like a southern
vaguely
accent.
Southern and the rest of the time he's not.
Can we talk about my favorite worst speech he gives in this movie?
Is it all of them?
It's specifically one.
Which one?
It's when him and the guy from the in whatever, the French guy.
Got it.
Yeah, is are talking when the raptors are kind of bouldered up, and he's just like, you know, I used to have a wolf cub that was about 2 months old, and then my wife came at me with a steak knife, and the wolf cub took out a chunk of her arm. I was just like, what? Is this like grandstanding and he's bullshitting, or is this like, are we supposed to believe this really happened, that he had a wolf cub?
That's when he, because for the longest time he was like, wolves are the perfect soldier, and he was trying to weaponize wolves. And then he was like, wait a minute, dinosaurs. Even his death is just so lazy. Like, he's talking and then a dinosaur jumps out and eats him. Yeah. It's like,
I like that it bit his hand first. Just, I thought that was kind of cool.
Again, I go back to even Gennaro. Like, those moments counted.
Yeah.
Each time a character died in that movie, and again, there were very few. It wasn't the mass fucking carnage of Jurassic World. There were very few, but each one of them counted and impacted you in a different way. Sometimes it was like, haha, Gennaro got eaten because he's a lawyer and he's on the toilet and it's the most humiliating death. And sometimes it's clever girl, the hunter, mm-hmm. and you're like, uh-oh, this guy who was our saving grace just got taken out. And so now what are we going to do? And in this movie, it's just like, well, Vincent D'Onofrio is
a bad guy.
And then he just gets eaten. And I feel the same way as when any other character in this movie gets eaten.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an impossible part to play. So I think you'll agree with that. But Vincent
because it's
D'Onofrio,
a character that doesn't belong in this movie.
No, it doesn't. It's
we don't need. And then we also have Irfan Khan playing what? The who took over for John Hammond.
Yeah, but is he like represents everything that Hammond wouldn't want like in this park.
And his whole thing is like he's going to be a pilot, and he's not a very good pilot. And so then he flies a helicopter and it crashes.
I thought it was great though. Some of his dialogue was just like, he's like, I bet your generals never went into battle with you, huh, guys? Hey, what do you think of me?
There are lines of dialogue that are so impossible to say. I don't know how the actor said them with straight faces. It was like, I will review your proposal and see if it's up to the moral standards of Jurassic Park. I mean, it's like, These lines were written out and then they handed them to actors to say, and then the actors just said them without complaining. His character, again, extraneous, served no function. Served no function. He's what, the corporate face of Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Because isn't that what Bryce Dallas Howard is?
Yeah.
So why do we have two of them? And why is his arc to be a bad pilot and crash a helicopter?
Please, Bryce Dino Howard.
Okay. Let's talk about the characters in this movie.
I would love to.
Because there were humans in this movie.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, it was about humans. I mean, I know really it's about the dinosaurs, and I'm just being the asshole who couldn't have fun watching crazy dinosaur action, right? I understand that. But I do like to have some people to serve as surrogates or to be interesting or whatever. So were there any characters and or performances in this film that you enjoyed?
Only because I enjoy the actors playing them.
Not the same thing.
Okay, so characters. Well, I'm glad I got that out of the way.
I like Chris Pratt.
I like Chris Pratt. I like Jake Johnson.
Jake Johnson, again, what is he doing in this movie?
He's got nothing
the
to do.
The fucking
beast. He's in the room for the entire movie.
Right, and he's friends with Colin Trevorrow, and he wears the Jurassic Park shirt, and ha-ha, and he's like...
I thought Pepsisaurus and Tostito Don was funny.
Sure, okay. There's that awful comic beat where he's saying goodbye to the girl and tries to kiss her, and they have a little thing where she's like, oh, I have a boyfriend, and we're all supposed to be laughing, like... This is kind of the climax of the movie, right? This is when shit's getting real.
Yeah, I thought it was also strange, too. Like, even in the beginning of the movie, the way... All right, so is Bryce Dino Howard supposed to be, like, their boss, I guess?
I guess.
The way... All right, this is just something that's, like, nitpicky bullshit, but, like, the way they're talking to her, like, basically about how stupid she is and, like, what terrible ideas she has, it's like, you would never talk to your boss like that.
Right, right.
You would wait till they leave, and then you talked about, about them like that. But I don't know. That just kind of took me out. But Chris Pratt is not a good character, but he is such a charismatic actor that I thought... Hey, I'm having a good time when he's on screen.
I will admit that had it been another actor, I think it would have been much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it skates by a little bit based on him being who he is. But, I mean, there just is not a part to play. There's no... He's just the guy who's, what, always right.
Yeah.
Sometimes cocky, but not that often, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not like... particularly roguish. He just makes a few kind of sexist or overly confident comments towards Bryce Dallas Howard because they had one date and that's their big shared history. That's their Indian Marian connection, is that they went out on a date.
Yeah.
And listen, she just needs to loosen up. She just needs a guy like him to loosen her up a little because she's so buttoned up and she's all business.
I'm glad we're seeing eye to eye finally on this. Yes, she is too buttoned up in business.
And I know that we're not supposed to talk about the sexism in Jurassic World, right? Because now the internet has already said, like, half the articles are about how it's super sexist and then half the articles are about, like, hey, stop it. Sometimes movies are just movies and can't they be fun?
Yeah.
Joss Whedon drew some criticism a couple months ago because
he can't keep his big mouth shut.
There was a clip and he said, really, this is what we're doing. And then of course the irony is Avengers Age of Ultron comes out. Everyone calls him a sexist because of what happens to Black Widow. He leaves Twitter over it. But he wasn't wrong. I don't think, I mean, should he have said something on Twitter about it? No, probably just based on one clip, but the movie comes out and I feel like he's a little bit validated because she is just kind of an uptight corporate person who needs Chris Pratt to come along and loosen her up a little bit. And when we're watching her at the end of the movie, like, no one else is being photographed the same way. She's still running around literally in high heels. The slit on her skirt keeps getting higher and higher. She takes the jacket off, so she just has the tank top on.
She's got, like, the sweatiest
the
chest
The sweaty
ever.
Chest running in slow motion, breasts bouncing up and down.
Yeah.
No one else, with the exception of the fucking Velociraptor, is being photographed this way. So you tell me, is there some sort of sexism there?
There is and there isn't. There is when you describe it like that.
The way it is, you mean?
The way it is.
The way it's the way shown it in the movie? Is.
Yeah.
Okay. If I were to describe something else, it wouldn't be.
Right.
Got it.
So, however, I'm not going to shit on the movie as being sexist at the point, up until the end, because I agree with you, like, when she's just basically, like, all sweaty and running in slow-mo, that's not... She's the only woman, really, at that point in the movie, and she's portrayed that way.
basically the only woman in the movie, period. But go ahead.
For the most part. So, yeah. So, but leading up to that, I mean, it's not, I mean, there's like that, there's scenes where the dynamic is a little sexist. However, I mean, at the same time, are you talking about it being sexist because she's not like a woman of action? Because she's a corporate person. She's not like training raptors as her job. So, like, why would you expect her to be?
I don't need her.
Oh, like soldier lady.
No, I don't need her to be soldier lady. And I'm not even saying the whole movie is sexist. I'm saying like it certainly has a very specific view of women. But and even that's not fair because all of its characters are underwritten. You know what I mean? It's not like Chris Pratt is this three dimensional interesting guy, and she's just a cardboard cutout. That's not the case.
Yeah.
At the same time, for as thinly written as both characters are, you have her, who's presented the way I just described, and is always wrong to boot, and Chris Pratt, who's heroic and strong and always right, and ultimately, quote-unquote, sort of not tames her, but, you know, loosens her up by the end. So he is sort of the dominant character. And so, yeah, there is... Listen, I'm not trying to call Jurassic World sexist. I'm really not. I'm just saying that's a problem. And I wanted to have a discussion about it, and now's probably not the time because we're running, you know, how we're running, and we probably have more to say about this fantastic movie. But there was an article that came online by John Squires, who wrote at contv.com, and he's a well-known horror journalist and writes under the name Freddy in Space. And he wrote a piece called "Is Popcorn Entertainment Being Held to Unrealistic Societal Standards?" And he makes the point that, like, why, you know, the internet gives access to 24-hour, 7-day-a-week outrage, you know, so there has to be all these think pieces about, like, Jurassic World is sexist. And the counterpoint is, hey, can't movies just be fun? And yes, of course they can be fun, but those two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. Like, they could be fun not at the expense of advancing certain images in 2015. He says, you know, earlier this month, the man Max Fury wrote, and I don't want to mischaracterize anything he says. I'm not reading directly. I'm paraphrasing. Like, earlier this month, Mad Max Fury Road came out and people were championing it for being kind of feminist, and that's all well and good. But, you know, not every movie is going to be that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I just thought that was an interesting point, because it was like, so it's okay when a movie does it right to champion it, but when it's doing something wrong, we're not allowed to call it out and be like, hey, guys, let's try to do better. I think that's all I'm trying to say is, like, we could try to do better. Jurassic Park is not a feminist movie.
Yeah.
But it's also...
it's got positive portrayals of women.
Just positive portrayals of humans, you know? Yeah. Just like... yeah. Laura Dern is just a good character who is positively portrayed, who happens to be a woman, you know? It's not like every woman needs to be Ellen Ripley or something like that.
I don't think that... I mean, like, I don't think that the... I think if the... it happened, it's because of this amalgamation of script and story ideas just kind of like are a mess together. Cause I don't think Colin Trevorrow is sexist based on his previous movie. And I
don't either. I'm not trying to call anyone specifically sexist.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying that you are.
Right.
But I mean, like, do I agree with what he's saying, what that gentleman is saying in his article about how movies should be just allowed to be fun, and we should turn off our switch about the sexist thing? Yes, a little bit.
Sure.
I think that's fair, because we should, I mean, like, and when we see it in Mad Max Fury Road and we applaud that it's a feminist movie and everybody's, you know, happy about that, which I was one of those people. I was very happy about that. I thought that was a really cool twist on something that could have been a super male driven movie. Whereas with Jurassic World, I didn't think it was any different than if we would have called out The Lost World as being sexist because Julianne Moore's character was an idiot.
Right.
I mean, she was a complete idiot in that. Or Taya Leone's character in Jurassic Park 3 is a complete moron, and she's the only woman in that movie.
And to be fair, I'm not even saying, like, Jurassic World is a sexist movie, because it's just, I didn't like anything in it. So
what's the gender of the raptors?
Oh, good point. If that one was female, then we see two running, and we see two females running in slow-mo.
Well, Indominus Rex is a bitch.
When Bryce Dallas Howard's character is sort of the stereotypical business lady, you know, yeah. I was dismissing it because I was thinking to myself, well, no one in this movie is a character, right?
Yeah.
It really wasn't until that shot where she's running in slow-mo and has gotten more naked and sweatier where I was like, okay, movie, now you are calling attention to yourself in such a way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so I think I'm allowed to say, like, well, that's a problem. The same way I'm allowed to say, like, Star Trek Into Darkness, when Alice Eve strips down to her underwear for no reason than to put an underwear shot in the trailer, that's wrong. And right. That movie sucks for lots of reasons that have nothing to do with that, you know? So I'm not standing on the mountaintop yelling, Star Trek Into Darkness is sexist. Mm-hmm. But let's try to do better. We don't need that shot, right? We don't need the shot of Bryce Dallas Howard running in the slow-mo with the sweat and the naked.
Yeah.
That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all. Again,
I gotcha.
My problems with the movie go far, far beyond representations of women because I didn't... We get a dinosaur who's supposed to be bigger and scarier. Let's talk about Indominus Rex.
Yes.
Interesting to you?
No.
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 It's That's a problem, yes?
It's Spinosaurus Part 2.
Right. Yeah. That's a problem. Again.
Yeah.
T-Rex worked. Yeah. Why did T-Rex work?
Because it was a real thing that, like, we have had in our imaginations for years, and we got to see it on screen, and it was interesting. And they set up interesting rules and reasons for its behavior. And people reacted to it in a believable way. Whereas Indominus Rex, I've heard it described in other pieces of media as Plotosaurus Rex, where it does whatever the plot requires it being. You know,
and that's true, right?
It needs to
right,
camouflage
right.
in a scene.
So
and
they can keep revealing,
and,
like, oh, it has this DNA.
Yeah, or it has to be part raptor, so like we can get the plot twist at the end where it communicates with the raptors and whatnot. All that's fine. I just didn't think, like, from a design aspect, it was all that interesting.
It looked kind of like a T-Rex.
It looked like a white,
not that interesting.
It looked like an albino T-Rex.
Right.
So, yeah.
When that's your big heavy in the movie, though, again, I think that's a problem. When you've invented a monster to be the biggest, scariest, baddest monster of all time, and your whole movie is commenting on that,
yeah.
I think you got to at least deliver on that monster.
Yeah.
And I don't think they do in any way. Like, I don't think it was ever scary. I don't think it was effective. Again, the shot of all the brachiosaurs or whatever those dinosaurs were laying in the field, like, that's a decent shot. That's visual storytelling when it pulls back and you realize it didn't just kill this one. It killed a bunch of them. It's laying waste to this whole field.
Yeah.
That's an effective shot. I mean, there's moments, you know, there's a few moments here and there that are like that. But for me, it just did not work nearly as well. And it's just about picking your moments. Again, say what you will about Steven Spielberg. Not everybody loves Steven Spielberg. Guy knows how to pick his moments, right? And that's what makes T-Rex such an effective monster in the first Jurassic Park. I agree with you that there is a little bit of like, well, it was a real thing and now it's back. But I think had there never been a Tyrannosaurus Rex, we've never seen one. We don't know what they act like. Mm-hmm. But we see the one in Jurassic Park. We're like, that's the scariest thing ever because he knows how to stage those moments. And I don't think there's anything in Jurassic World that...
No, there's no anticipation of moments in this movie.
But he tries to do it. He tries to hold back on the reveal. He tries to recreate so many...
He doesn't hold back for that long, really. You get a pretty
good... Even when it breaks out, we don't really see it.
I might be
misremembering. We see pieces of it.
I might be misremembering.
I might be too, to be honest. I felt like we see kind of pieces of it, but that we don't see the whole thing.
I thought by the time they're doing like that dumb beat that's supposed to be like Aliens where he fights the Marines and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a thing.
I thought that you had seen the whole thing by that point, which was maybe in the first third of the movie.
I might be remembering it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I would like to see, because they're going to make another one.
Well,
sure.
B.D. Wong got off the island with more samples to make the ultimate weapon.
Don't make another big variation of the Tyrannosaurus Rex be the villain. Make it be a big swarm. You combine the Dilophosauruses with the pterodactyls, and you've got flying Dilophosauruses, and you've got hundreds of them.
Terrifying.
That is scary. That is scary. I was bummed out that the only Dilophosaurus thing was the hologram this time around. I kind of wish there was a little bit, because that thing is awesome, and it hasn't been in a Jurassic Park movie since the first one.
But it almost doesn't need to be, right? Because they got
but
it right.
I just really like it. I really like it. I
guess, but again, it had its moment, and it's very memorable.
Yeah.
That one scene with Wayne Knight is more memorable than anything Indominus Rex does in all of Jurassic World.
I agree. It's a step up from Spinosaurus, though, I would say.
Sure. Sure. I don't
know. I mean, like, but like I went
lateral move, really, but okay.
That's fine. One thing I wanted to kind of comment on, just because I have some jokes about it, is the visitor center scene where they stumble upon the visitor center inside the compound or inside the enclosure.
Yeah. Callback Cove. That's what I call
Callback
it.
Cove. So, if presumably they didn't clear anything out because they still have two Jeeps that just are sitting in there, why wouldn't we believe that there's a frozen raptor in the freezer? And why can't we see the frozen raptor in the freezer?
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been a good scare.
They built all of Jurassic World around an existing T-Rex.
Yeah.
That part I don't understand.
Yeah.
When you tell me it's the same T-Rex, I think, oh, so they came to the island and built the theme park around it? Where did they put T-Rex in the meantime?
Isla Sorna.
I assumed that it was just a new cloned T-Rex.
No,
which to me makes sense.
OG. It's the OG.
But to make it the OG, okay.
Yeah. Where are all the Costa Ricans in this movie?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe they're all training the raptors to be in the Costa Rican army.
Did the little hamster ball segment?
No, that was bullshit.
No, come on. That stands right up against the Jeep sequence in Jurassic Park, right?
Not even that. It's just, okay, I don't demand complete reality in these movies. I'm more forgiving than most people probably, but I know that in no park at all would you have this hamster ball that you just allow people to control and go willy-nilly and go like out of the park and into like the brush areas and things like that.
With
the killer dinosaurs. And also, like, if they're shutting down the entire park, you would shut down the ride. You wouldn't allow them to keep going.
Right.
So, I don't know. That whole sequence, I was happy when it was over because I didn't think any of it worked. And they were like, oh, it's protected by this invisibility shield so the dinosaurs can't see you. It's like, well, you still take up space. So, like, what if you get whipped by a tail?
Right.
It's like, what's going to happen?
But it gave us that sweet Jimmy Fallon cameo.
Fuck Jimmy Fallon. All right.
No, that was
great.
Can I
talk about Jimmy Fallon for 1 second?
If you need to.
Okay. I don't like Jimmy Fallon, first of all. And I know people love him on The Tonight Show, but it's bullshit. And I don't like him on the Universal Tram Tour, and I don't like him in my Jurassic World movie.
When I saw the trailers for Jurassic World, I liked the visual of the hamster ball because I felt like they were going to do some futuristic stuff with it. Like, I thought this was going to be a more futuristic theme park, but it turns out that's really the only futuristic thing in the park. So that was a bit of a letdown, but okay, whatever. Otherwise, it was just every theme park we've ever been to, plus dinosaurs. If someone could just turn velociraptors into soldiers, the ultimate soldiers, think of it.
Did you see the trailer from Max about the soldier dog?
Nope.
No.
Did Vincent D'Onofrio turn dogs into the ultimate soldiers?
He did. That's actually what the plot of Max is about. It's pretty good.
There's no good human heavy. There's no good dinosaur heavy. So, who are we rooting against?
I thought Vincent D'Onofrio was
who
fun.
Who are we rooting for? Oh.
I thought he was fun in that movie. He looked like he was just constantly adjusting himself and, like, you could tell Jake Johnson was uncomfortable because every scene he's just putting his arm on his shoulder and everything. It's just like, it's just this big slovenly performance. Yeah. I got a kick out of it.
All right. All right. Listen, I can't argue with you. Anything else you want to say about Jurassic World? Because all I've done is complain. I apologize.
No, that's fine. You riff for 30 seconds and then I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'm just wrapping up my thoughts. I wanted to, I had low expectations, I will admit, because the trailers hadn't done much for me. But I'm a big enough fan of Jurassic Park and enjoy big spectacle movies and monster movies, which is, you know, in theory, what this is supposed to be, is a monster movie. But I just did not think it was a very good one. Honestly, except for like a few music cues, which I also felt like, oh, this, and I don't remember the moment. Mm-hmm. The first time we hear the Jurassic Park theme.
I know. It's when they're on the monorail going into the park for the first time. And then they like go into the Hilton and they okay. open up the shutters and they look out into the park.
Okay. So at least the shot goes on and wants to impress you with like its scope and its scale, right? Cause it's digitally created. But when that theme first kicks in and we're not actually seeing anything awe inspiring, we're literally just like watching two people talk.
Yeah.
I was so irritated. I was like, oh, they don't even understand the power of this music and don't know how to apply it. It reminded me of when I saw Get Smart, which isn't a good movie.
Yeah.
They didn't know when to use the theme song.
Okay.
So they don't use it in the opening when he's doing this long walk like that with all the jokes, and they kind of recreate the opening titles of the show. Instead, they're playing like ABBA's Take a Chance on Me. And I was like, oh, they don't even understand their own property.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of when okay. they use, or in Rob Zombie's Halloween, the first time we hear the iconic Halloween music is when young Michael Myers, you know, weird.
Yeah. He's running Dig Ferch.
Yeah. He's running down the hallway at school yeah. and like, oh yeah, there we go. That's when you turn on some of the most iconic horror music of all time.
That's actually what the Raptors are saying when they do that cough thing. They go, Ferch, Ferch. No, I thought the music in the opening was kind of cool. I liked it because it was unveiling the park, Jurassic World, and that was the thing you were supposed to be in awe of as opposed
like
to...
Like I said, when it...
But in the first one, there's more power to the moment because you're seeing a brontosaurus for the first time.
Well... Right, so this is kind of fucked up. And like I said, as the shot continued, it justified the use of the music.
Yeah.
When it first kicked in, I was like, oh, this is wrong. And then it justifies the use of the music. But think about what we are now inspiring awe with, right?
Yeah.
When we inspire awe in Jurassic World, and I don't think it's meant to be ironic.
No, it's not.
It is this mecca to consumerism, right? It's like, yeah. Look at this amazing theme park, as opposed to like, look at the billion-year-old dinosaur we recreated from mosquito DNA. We're going to turn these into the ultimate soldiers, brachiosaurs.
I hate to burst your bubble, but at Universal Studios California, when the park opens for the day, they play the theme to Jurassic Park.
That's fine.
Like, welcome to consumerism.
That's fine. Listen, this is the world we're in.
Two things that I wanted to mention was I really liked the petting zoo. I thought that was really cute.
Okay.
Where the kids were able to ride like baby triceratops, and then the one kid hugged the brontosaurus, little baby brontosaurus. I like that.
Okay.
And then also,
feels like you might be reaching, but go ahead.
InGen. I want to work for InGen.
Sure.
I'll tell you why I want to work for InGen.
Breeding the ultimate soldiers.
Because they empower their employees to do whatever they want to do. Like, there is no board of directors saying, hey, this may not be a bad idea, or this might not be a good idea. There's no bosses or directors or management or insurance or lawyers. There's nothing like that. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I literally struggled with understanding the chain of command in this movie.
Yeah.
Because you have Bryce Dallas Howard as one figurehead. You have Irfan Khan as one figurehead. You have Vincent D'Onofrio as another figurehead.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt is just kind of played by his own rules. I don't know who he works
for. It doesn't make sense because they're like, we recruited him out of the Navy. It's like, why would you pick a sailor? It's like, are there a lot of underwater raptors?
Who knows more about dinosaurs?
Wouldn't it make more sense for him to train the Mosasaur or something like that?
Nothing in this movie actually makes sense.
Nothing. Oh, nothing. Now I get it.
It's literally just a bunch of shit thrown together. And again, you can make fun summer movies. I disagree with this idea, like, turn off your brain, because as I said a million times, no, I use my brain to have fun.
Yeah.
So I can't turn off my brain, but I am capable of still having fun with a movie that's dumb, aware of its own dumbness, and still fun. But this movie wasn't to me, fun or dumb in a way that was like, we know what we are and we're embracing it.
This movie for me is junk food that I will gladly watch a bunch of times, because before I go see, say, Inside Out or Ted 2 or Terminator 4 or 5 or how many they're on.
Yeah.
I'll probably sneak into Jurassic World and watch 15 minutes of it rather than sitting in an empty auditorium before a movie starts.
And maybe in 15-minute pieces, the movie works better.
It's funny because the movie that I compare it to this year the most for me is Furious 7, where I can recognize it's got a lot of things wrong with it, but I just had a great time. I just like the fact that it's not... I just feel like Jurassic World got the tone mostly right, where it's a fun sequel to Jurassic Park that's not trying to be better than Jurassic Park, and it's kind of upfront in the movie that it knows it's not going to be as good as Jurassic Park.
I guess I feel like it's the Jaws 3 of the Jurassic Park franchise.
Okay, I would say more Jaws 2, but that's just my opinion.
I don't know if I've ever seen Jaws 2.
Really?
Yeah,
you're not missing too much.
No,
but
I know.
It's got some good parts in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you want to talk about Jaws 2?
Okay.
Can we get a review real quick from Lights, Camera, Adam?
Oh, jeez.
I didn't want to
disappoint
the listeners. All right.
Okay.
Here's Lights, Camera, Adam with his review of Jurassic World.
In summation, I think Jurassic...
Wait, let me interrupt. Hold on. Lights, Camera, Adam opens his review in summation?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. In
summation... Hi, everybody. To conclude...
In summation... I think Jurassic World has a lot more bite left in the franchise than it being long in the tooth. So, on the official LCA report card, I give this movie gum. Chewy and fun, but also disposable.
Thank you very much, Adam. Thank you
You're welcome, guys,
for listening. Remember, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie, and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Happy June Sploitation. Keep going. We got about half the month left to go.
Yep.
And we will talk to you guys next week.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.